Ja svoje filmsko vreme posvećujem Raši Teodosijeviću, Bajani Pejić, Goranu Đorđeviću, Ješi Denegriju, Radomiru Damljanu, Neši Paripoviću, Jasni Tjardović, Marini Abramović, Dragici Vukadinović, Goranu Trbuljaku, Slavku Timotijeviću, Zoranu Popoviću, Gergelju Urkomu, Dragomiru Zupancu, Biljani Tomić, Dunji Blažević.
Ja bih rekla da se nalazimo u Jugoslaviji, da se nalazimo u Studentskom kulturnom centru u Beogradu, živimo u samoupravljenju ili da pokušavamo nekako sa ostalima da ga gradimo. Mi smo nekih 5 godina zajedno ovde u Studentskom kulturnom centru. Sa nama su ljudi koji nisu ovde u našem užem krugu, kao što je Luci, nekolicina drugih za raznih krajeva sveta, što nije slučajno. Okolnosti nisu takođe slučajne, prema tome postoji nešto što nas svakako vezuje, postoji neka zajednička nit, neka ideja ili neki ideal zbog kojega smo svi ovde, nije to samo sticajem okolnosti ili silom prilika. Međutim, tu će se naravno videti naše vrlo velike individualne razlike, što je isto jako dobro. Prema tome ne funkcionišemo kao nekakva grupa isključiva sa programom i tako dalje, nego su tu ipak nekakve druge stvari koje iza čitavog ovog našeg grada stoje.
Ovo je velika dvorana Studentskog kulturnog centra u Beogradu i u njoj se prikazuju filmovi. Moj prijatelj Lutz Becker je komponovao ovaj kadar po uzoru na jedan kadar u filmu Samuraj Jean-Pierre Melville. Taj će se film prikazivati u ovom dvoje dvorani kroz jedno mesec dana. U čast gospodina Jean-Pierre Melville, koga čije filmove jako volim, kupio sam ovaj Montgomery kaput, zato što u njegovim filmovima taj Montgomery kaput ima određeno značenje. Sad ću ga obući i odigrati taj kadar koji se dešava u filmu Samuraj.
Volela bih da ovaj film nema simboliku o nikome i o nečemu. Ispada da je uvek lakše govoriti o nečem drugom nego o samom sebi.
Moje ideje su antropološka učila u oblasti umetnosti, tačnije učila koje demonstriraju i razjašnjavaju umetnost putem mehanički izrađenih umetničkih objekata. Moje ideje su antropološka učila u oblasti umetnosti, tačnije učila koja demonstriraju i razjašnjavaju umetnost putem mehanički izrađenih umetničkih objekata. Sera, Monet. Kazimir Majević. Marcel Duchamp. Picabia. Nam Gabon. Pevsner. Kupka. Pelisitski. Vladimir Majakovski. Kle. Ernst. Mark Tobi.
Perspektive razrešavanja kriznih situacija unutar kojih se umetnost u svim postojećim društveno-ekonomskim sistemima danas kreće, ne nalaze se u zahtevu za nekim zapravo nemogućim poboljšavanjem interne strukture umetničkih jezika ili pak u zahtevu za isto tako nemogućim povratkom na navodne vrednosti koje ona u svojoj daljoj ili bližoj prošlosti posjedovala, već se pre svega nalazi u zahtevu za radikalnim preobražajem same te društveno-ekonomske baze, što bi nadalje uslovilo dalje proširenje individualnih i javnih sloboda, kao i optimalne načine kolektivnog korištenja rezultata tih sloboda. A sigurno je da bi unutar tog sveopšteg preobražaja i umetnost našla mesto svog potpunijeg ispoljavanja. A to, drugim rečima, nije ništa drugo nego perspektiva revolucionarne izmene globalne situacije. Jer svi dosadašnji prodori u nova područja svesti ostajali su, obzirom na to da su bili prezentirani samo kao metafore slobode koje su delovale na omeđenom području značenja, stalno izolirani u sferi nadgradnje, ne dopirući do onih temeljnih spoznaja u kojima se formirala svest o bitnim prelomima koje bi trebalo izvršiti u samim maticama društvenih gibanja. Šta je dakle danas preostalo umetnosti i umetnicima da naprave u konkretnim istorijskim okolnostima u kojima se još ni izdaleka ne sagledavaju mogući i stvarni oblici razotučenja kojima oni po prirodi svog angažmana moraju težiti? Čini se da bi jedan od osnovnih zadataka morala biti borba za afirmaciju svesti o zasnivanju tim konkretnim istorijskim okolnostima adekvatne pretpostavke o danas realno mogućoj primarnoj prirodi umetnosti. Ona bi se, naime, trebala lišavati svih mističkih, transcendentalnih, ali i formalističkih atributa kojima je permanentno otupljivana njena i onako krhka, efektivna mogućnost društvenog delovanja. Da bi se nasuprot tome umetnost uvek iznova zasnivala kao perspektiva kritičke i autokritičke prakse usmerene prema svemu što bi na bilo koji način moglo i nadalje otuđivati njenu vitalnu egzistenciju. Ne treba pri tome gajiti preterane iluzije da u ovom istorijskom trenutku postoje realni preduslovi ovakvog razrešenja. Sigurno je, naime, da će oprobane metode asimilatorskih preformulacija i prekvalifikacija svih radikalnijih predloga, čime se služi strategija kulturne politike neokapitalizma, kao isto tako oprobane metode konformističke integracije ili postupne diskvalifikacije takvih istih predloga, čime se služi strategija kulturne politike birokratskog socijalizma, još za dugo vremena uspevati da održe ovo danas već toliko evidentno stanje krize, ispoljene ne samo na području interne prirode, već isto tako i na području same društvene funkcije umetnosti. Jer globalno političko stanje današnjeg sveta takovo je da sve više verujemo u to da je Marcuse bio u pravu kada je tvrdio da se savremena umetnost nikada i neće osloboditi alijenacije u kojoj se zapravo nalazila tokom celokupne svoje dosadašnje istorije. Ukoliko bi to doista i bila njena realna i jedina moguća perspektiva, onda ne preostaje ništa drugo nego da, bez obzira na sve idealističke predrasude kojima se ljudski duh uporno hrani, ovu fazu u njenom istorijskom bivanju okvalificiramo samo kao jednu etapu u procesu verovatne i neminovne smrtnosti umetnosti, zasnovane na onim oblicima i na onim funkcijama koje danas susrećemo u postojećem istorijskom iskustvu. To naravno ne znači i potpuno iščezavanje potrebe za umetnošću u jednom mogućem, temeljito preobraženom svetu budućnosti. Dosledno osnovnoj zakonitosti njene uslovljenosti konkretnim društveno-ekonomskim pretpostavkama, ona će sigurno poprimati i posve izmenjene oblike i vidove egzistencije, no sigurno je da, se ni tada neće ugasiti imanentna potreba umetnosti za uvek novim preispitivanjima njenog duhovnog smisla i njene socijalne funkcije.
Ciljevi umetničke aktivnosti su u svojoj osnovi ili nedovoljno precizno definisani, podložni mistifikaciji ili neostvarljivi, želja za dostizanjem apsolutnih kategorija ili objektivno beznačajni, što dozvoljava direktno usmeravanje, kontrolu i samim tim manipulaciju karaktera njenih rezultata od strane mehanizma koji obezbeđuje njihovu realizaciju i prezentaciju. Umetnost je klasnom društvu imanentan oblik svesti i delatnosti i predstavlja jedan od perfidnih instrumenata vladajuće klase u procesu eksploatacije većine. Pošto je karakter rezultata umetničke delatnosti, karakter umetničkih dela, direktno determinisan zahtevima mehanizma koji obezbeđuju uslove, pre svega materijalne za njihovu realizaciju i prezentaciju, normalno je što ti rezultati nisu u stanju da efikasno ugroze funkcionisanje tog mehanizma, nego po pravilu usmereni su tako da mu služe. Mislim da se glavni uzroci zbog kojih su pojedini pokreti u okviru umetnosti bili nedovoljno efikasni u odnosu na društvenu praksu, kriju u neshvatanju prave klasne prirode umetničke svesti i delatnosti. Karakter i uloga umetnosti u totalitarnom društvu nije njena degradacija, nego naprotiv, to je njeno pravo lice koje se u drugim uslovima manje ili više uspešno prikriva. Umetnost je pre svega rezultat iluzije o slobodi, a ne način ispoljavanja slobode ljudskog bića, i svaka delatnost koja je cilj afirmacije umetničke svesti znači istovremeno produžavanje ove iluzije. U zemljama koje grade socijalistički odnos u društvu, ne samo da nije shvaćen klasni karakter umetničke svesti, nego se naprotiv, ovakva svest i podržava i afirmiše kroz odgovarajuće aktivnosti, što samim tim dozvoljava egzistenciju onih snaga i mehanizama koji po svojoj prirodi imaju vrlo malo zajedničkog sa istinskim naporima za bolje, humanije odnose u društvu i za veći stepen slobode svakog ljudskog bića u njemu. Nije problem kakva umetnost treba da bude, nego je problem kako umetnost da se prevaziđe i kao oblik svesti i kao oblik delatnosti.
Umetnost mora biti lepa. Umetnik mora biti lep. Umetnost mora biti lepa. Umetnost mora biti lepa. Mora biti lep. Umetnik mora biti lep. Umetnost mora biti lepa. Umetnik mora biti lep. Umetnik mora biti lep. Umetnik mora biti lep. Lepo. Mora biti lep. Televizijski program 29. novembra 1985. Subota. 9:30 vesti. 9:40 koncert Dubačkog orkestra TBLJ. 10:10 Sunce te čuva TBB. 10:40 Tako raste domovina. Pesme u izvođenju dečjih horova TBC. 11:10 Pobeda susret kulturno-umetničkih društava Abrašević u Jajcu TBC. 12:10 Opomena, recital TBZ. 13:00 Znanje i manje, prenos B TBB. 15:00 Prenos odbojkaške utakmice za prvenstvo Jugoslavije između ekipa Crvene zvezde Spartaka TBB. 16:40 TV Dnevnik. 17:00 Banja Luka, rukometni turnir Avnoja, prenos finalne utakmice. 18:15 Deca pevaju, priredba za najmlađe. 19:15 Crtani film. 19:20 Ekran u svaki dom. 19:30 TV Dnevnik. 20:00 Kapanski kresovi. Prva epizoda serije B. 21:20 Reč po reč. 22:20 TV Dnevnik. 22:40 Partizanske pesme u modernom aranžmanu.
Kada kažem, ja sam za slobodu stvaranja i demokratiju u umetnosti, mogu to da kažem kao jednu ordinarnu frazu koja nema pozadinu u praksi i tu rečenicu upotrebljavam u prigodnim prilikama. Isto tako mogu da vam, da imam veoma jasne selektivne kriterijume šta podrazumijem pod pojmom umetnost, ali se to iz prethodne rečenice nikako ne može naslutiti. Također mogu da se kroz takav vid apstraktne pozitivne orijentacije zalažem za dekadentne, prevaziđene i štetne primjere iz umetničke prakse, zastupajući ideje o večnom trajanju jedne slobode kroz njene slobodne varijatete. Sa druge strane sam prinuđen da u okviru praktičnog djelovanja činim ustupke ovakvom apstraktnom iskazu i na taj način podržavam sve tri varijante. Ovo je ipak samo medij, a medij se najviše isplati. Ja ne mogu ni da vas pipnem, ni da vas udarim.
Braćo Dimitrijević.
Ovaj film bi mogao da bude od historijskog značaja.
Vremena, gledao sam jedan film od King Vidora koji se zove Gomila. U njemu glavni junak na početku filma vozi se ulicom i gleda jednog čovjeka koji ima na sebi plakat i koji baca loptice u zrak. On se tom čovjeku na neki način podsmijehuje i smatra da je to žalost da jedan čovjek mora raditi takvu profesiju. Taj čovjek sa puno talenta kroz cijeli film pokazuje različite načine na koje hoće afirmirati svoju ličnost. Ima različite talente, hoće biti slikar. Uglavnom, mnogo stvari pokušava kroz cijeli film. Međutim, na kraju filma se desi to da on završi kao taj čovjek koji baca tri kuglice i koji nosi sendvič. Ja sam samo htio da sam imao stanje da 3 minute bacam kuglice. To je sve.
Umetničko delo. Umetnička aktivnost bi u sebi morala da sadrži novu pretpostavku kao alternativu koja bi se radikalno kritički odnosila prema dosadašnjoj praksi. Iz razloga prevazilaženja postojećeg umetničkog konformizma, postojeće društvenosti, gde su se promjene dešavale samo na nivou forme, odnosno jedan umetnički kontekst je zamjenjivao drugi, dok je establishment ostajao nepromijenjen, to jest ono što bitno određuje funkcionisanje umjetnosti, odnosno umetnika. Stoga je neophodna politizacija umetnosti. Umetnost mora biti negativna, kritična koliko prema spoljnom svetu, toliko i u odnosu na vlastiti jezik, vlastitu praksu. Besmisleno je i licemerno biti angažovan, govoriti i delati u ime nekakvog humaniteta čovječanstva, političkih i ekonomskih sloboda, a sa druge strane pasivno se odnositi prema sistemu univerzalnih umetničkih vrednosti. Sistemu koji je osnovna pretpostavka egzistencije umetničke birokratije, pa samim tim i nečuvene pljačke koji sprovode umetničke zvezde. Iz razloga vlastite reprodukcije, umetnička birokratija, jednom osvojivši vlast, manipuliše njome, snabdevajući uvek one pojave koje produžuju njenu egzistenciju. Na taj način ona usmerava i aranžira umetničku produkciju i produkcijone odnose. Posebno monopolom nad informacijom i obrazovanjem, birokratija stvara inertnog umetnika i pasivnog konzumera umetnosti, stvara veselo raspoložene robote. Na revolucionarnoj nesvjesnosti i podeljenosti umetnika, na dezorijentisanoj i dezorganizovanoj masi umetnika kao i na dezinformisanoj publici, učvršuje se moć umetničke birokratije, istoričara umetnosti, kustosa, činovnika sekretarijata za kulturu i drugih kulturnih i obrazovnih institucija, kritičara, umetnika, galerista itd. U ime univerzalnih vrednosti umetnosti, angažovana umetnost se svodi na estetiku politike. Tako, umjesto politizacije umetnosti, mi imamo estetiku politike. Estetizacija politike vodi obradi činjeničnog materijala u fašističkom smislu. Umetnost kao estetika politike je projekcija etatističko-administrativnog kao i tehnokratsko-liberalističkog konformizma. Marksističko poimanje umetnosti suprotno tome podrazumijeva politizaciju umetnosti. Da naš rad ne bi bio apologija status quo umetnosti, naše potpune kulturne alijeniranosti, da ne bi osvježavao krv nekonzervativnog i dogmatičnog društveno opasnog umetničkog establishmenta, koji opšte narodne kulturne vrednosti zadržava u posjedu malog broja ruku, što im omogućava svojevrsnu monopolizaciju na umetničkom tržištu, nad umetničkim vrednostima, umetničkom produkcijom i što je najvažnije nad informacijom i obrazovanjem. A to sve u svrhu reprodukcije vlastitog partijskog života, da mi umetnici ne bi svojom krajnjom pasivnošću prolongirali život svojim krvopijama, pa samim tim takvim svojim stavom pomagali klasnog neprijatelja proletarijata, proizvodeći upravo onakva dela koja je inače birokratija usmjerila i aranžirala svoju moć odlučivanja, nagrađivanja, otkupljivanja, organizovanja izložbi, financiranja kulture, dodelu stipendije itd. Mi ozbiljno moramo preispitati naš rad, našu ulogu, naš stvarni društveni položaj, naše savjetnike i naš interes. Svi oni umetnici koji se pasivno odnose prema postojećoj društvenosti, koji gledaju svoja posla i svoj čar, ili spadaju u kategoriju birokratije i malograđanštine, na čim se opet društveno-psihološkim osnovama sprovodi uzurpacija vlasti, dominacija nad čovekom i pljačkanje čoveka.
Majević. Mel Ransden. Donald Chad. Einstein. Formalna logika. Claude Lévi-Strauss. Ruska avantgarda. Majakovski. Tatlinov spomenik Trećoj internacionali.
Problem je, mislim, prvenstveno u shvatanju kulture i umetnosti, posebno u kulturnom ili intelektualnom sloju društva, kao autonomne, večne, univerzalne, humanizirajuće sfere u koje vladaju posebni trajni zakoni. Pritom se večne, u znacima navoda, podele umetnosti, činjenica unikatnosti rada, individualni, posve relativni produkti ne dovode u vezu sa istorijskom uslovljenošću u konkretnoj društveno-ekonomskoj sredini, već se smatra da jednom stvoreni model umetničkog rada da važe za sva vremena i sve sredine. Rezultat ovakvog shvatanja je potpuna nemogućnost uključivanja u postojeću društvenu praksu, društvenu podelu rada, sve mehanički i formalistički. Ta nasljeđena i brižno čuvana i razvijena shvatanja i njihove produkte treba ugurati u novi društveni sistem putem njegovih institucija. Zadržat ću se upravo na mehanizmima podruštvljavanja likovne umetnosti. Kod nas su do sada postojala dva osnovna izvora finansiranja otkup umetnosti, to jest umetničkih dela, društveni i privatni. Jedan i drugi primjer su odraz postojanja u suštini svojinskih odnosa i svojinskog karaktera postojeće umetnosti, što otkriva vrlo jasno na kojoj društveno-ekonomskoj bazi ova umetnost nastala, funkcionisala i razvijala se. Treći model u konstituisanju je potpuno originalan, samoupravni sistem slobodne razmene i udruživanja rada kroz samoupravne interesne zajednice i u osnovi predstavlja suštinski nov, ne svojinski odnos, rezultat je bazični društveni proces i promjena. Da bi ovaj sistem funkcionisao i da bi umetnost i društvo počeli da žive u jednom bitno novom odnosu, potrebno je temeljito ispitati i revidirati postojeće modele umetničkog rada i ponašanja. Treba menjati umetnost. Ovo društvo se, ako dobro razumem, već podosta izmenilo. Sve dok budemo, ne dirajući umetnost putem društvenih regulativa i mehanizama, prenosili umetnička dela iz atelja u depoje i podrume, smeštajući ih kao mrtvorođenu decu za naše kulturno potomstvo, ili dok budemo putem privatnog tržišta stvarali našu varijantu Nouveau Riche ili Kleinbürgera, imat ćemo umetnost kao društveni prirepak, kao nešto što, eto, baš ničem ne služi, ali bez čega nije pristojno i kulturno da se bude, kao nešto van nas, van naše društvene prakse, van samoupravljanja. Bilo bi krajnje komično i van pameti pokušati graditi samoupravljanje kao društveni sistem političkim sredstvima jedne feudalne ili buržoaske strukture, kao što je nemoguće stvarati umetnost jednog novog društva na nivou ideja i sredstava pomenutih struktura.
That's the first time that we've all watched those two pieces together. and I'd be, you're not forced to, but I'd be really interested in seeing if there's a kind of a conversation that any of us are interested in having about themes that we might draw between the two of them, or ideas that we might share as to how they're connected or not. But I'm really, as a person, I'm quite impatient and nervous, and I get worried about waiting for the kind of imminent conversation in the room to reveal itself. So I thought I'd maybe kind of kick that off a little bit. So I thought, I wondered also that the things that we've seen, I was watching them and thinking that they're in many ways about the both of the pieces are about the past and the future, but I thought it was also important to recognise that Lutz, who made that film, is present in the room with us, so I thought it might be a good way to start things by, maybe not, I'll try and not frame it as a question, but I wondered if Lutz might want to reflect upon some of the things that I thought were maybe themes or threads that linked the two things that we saw, and I wrote them down, so maybe something about speech and how we position ourselves, and where we stand, who we speak to, something about the relationship between political speech and action, a voice and silence, something about gesture and authority, and then a quote off of them, or something that I saw that Brian Carr had written about devices for fragmentation to create a splintered narrative that collages history, discourses times and spaces, acts of storytelling, fact and fiction, and reliable and unreliable narration. Those are the little things that I've written. That's probably far too many. You could talk about one of them, maybe. I feel like I'm rambling now. So the Lutz is over there, so I wonder if he has anything to say.
Well, the virtue of making such a film is that you just do it as we have done many years ago.
Well, look, could you speak up? I can hear you.
I have a bit of a curve, so I better stand up. This film was made in a state of complete poverty. It was made of short ends, they're given from great television, and it was edited at night with only one soundtrack, virtually one-to-one in distribution of film material. The film was made with a group of artists and friends working at the Students' Cultural Center in Belgrade, which was an institution supported by Belgrade University, and it was a place that interested me at the time most, film screenings and gallery spaces. I was interested in this group of artists. We became friends. In fact, at the Edinburgh Film Festival, Edinburgh Festival in 1972, Enrique DeMarco imported these group of artists, three of them, Marina Abramovic, Sara Popovic, and Eva Bukon, to be performing their work at the same time when Joseph Beuys was in Edinburgh. So it was an interesting moment for this part of the world. And this is how we befriended each other, and I ended up in Belgrade making this film a couple of years later. Originally, I thought, as they are performing artists, that we should film their performances. But as it turned out, at that point in time, these people wanted to explain what they see, what they do, their attitudes towards art, and the attitudes towards each other, the function of art, the making of art. And indeed, it was not anymore about the making of eternal values. In fact, these people were totally opposed to socialist realism, of course. They believed in art as a process, and an active process which was not just a matter of self-satisfaction or a matter of enjoying each other's activities, was an activity that would spill over into society either in the form of a criticism of society or in the form of a
comment, a set of metaphors, a set of associations are in dialogue with society. And this is how this film happens. This is why people talk as us, with us, and as it turned out, it is, has become a very strange and rare document of its time. So maybe you have a few questions.
Russia, Tulsievich.
The Russia Tulsievich, he has become quite a successful artist. In fact, he was last year the Serbian Montenegrin contribution to the Venice Biennale. It was a late but rather impressive triumph for an outsider. And I think it is very important to remember that these artists at that time within that socialist society, which was basically still very much attached to figuration, people were completely outside because no museum bought their work, no gallery sold it. They worked within themselves, had night jobs and all sorts of things to survive. But felt that they had to give a contribution to that society.
But to give them was Kunst.
Yeah. What
about early, it's amazing in Russia.
Yeah.
But early, like video artists from the 70s, the Fascist Kunst, where he.
Yes, you obviously know his document, which he mimeographed at the time and gave it to a number of us. Yes. He was quite. Provocative and playful, while others were more ideologically grounded. But for instance, this artist, Goran Georgievich, who stands in front of you, and you hear his voice, it's a voiceover, is in fact an artist who imitates art. He has confused the role of an artist, and therefore has been creating a criticism of modernism. I mean, there are a number of interesting strategies, and of course, the film of Marina Abramovich, and she combs her hair, Art Must Be Beautiful, The Artist Must Be Beautiful, is indeed the first time that she was ever filmed. She's now one of the great artists in the field of performance art in our building in New York. She has carried on in her own way. But these are all components in a group, and a fairly disorganized group of artists who were sometimes exhibiting together, but were largely attached to each other through their conversations and their class at the Academy of Art in Belgrade. But one must not think that they were a group. They were very diverse, very active, very aggressive at times, and operate also within this film within a system of associations. I think the whole principle of association is indeed an artistic measure, an artistic strategy, which of course also has been part of the performance tonight, of Carbon and Bread, because here you have, instead of artists talking on screen, artists creating a system of associations and overlapping impressions of different kinds of realities, and a reality which is exciting, important to record, and still we realize, being not involved in the struggle, sympathizers of the struggle, are part of the museum of the museum of non-participation. That is, these two events, the film and the performance, sway between the wish to participate and the frustration of it.
Why is this work being revisited now?
What was that?
Why is this work being revisited now?
I didn't get it, sorry.
Why has this work been revisited or finally looked again at now?
Well, that happened without my participation.
We came across your film when we were participating in the Stade de Lattes 48-hour seminar as part of their exhibition at the ICO. And they were showing it, weren't they, as part of the
Luke's question, really. Yeah. I mean, underneath Luke's question, I mean, I watch it and I was thinking about its contemporary relevance. This isn't the first time we've screened Kino Bolesh, Karen and I. And it's a really important question. Is its contemporary relevance, and I throw it open. But I know that the way I feel when I watch it, it's one of the films I feel that I actually think about who else is in the audience watching this film. Now, that's something I rarely feel when I'm watching a cinematic spectacle. But I actually feel the way it addresses me as a viewer is with a kind of potential. And so it makes me somehow think of my relationship to that image and my relationship to this idea of an individual within a group or a collective body. So something maybe, given our current, if I'm projecting onto your question, given our current last year and potential this year, of being in these situations where you are asking questions of yourself as to where you place your body, how you speak, where you put silence, or suffocated. I find it quite interesting that this film has come back at this moment, or not been chosen to, but been somehow rediscovered. And there's a tremendous act of translation of its context and its history, but then some of those things ring true to me. I mean, that's almost enough for me. It's like an invitation. So.
I was just going to ask, going back, a lot of the scenes where it's someone reading or speaking, in the soundtrack, you can hear the street outside or whatever, and I kept wondering. I don't know much about the history of that period, and I wondered, they're saying these words, and the world is, you can hear it, and I wondered, you just said a little bit about what it was like to be in that country at that particular time, and I guess the kind of political cultural context.
For my generation, one of the greatest requirements in thinking was the invasion of Czechoslovakia in 1968. 1968, when a socialist country with a new form of political thinking, led by Dubček, was overrun by the Warsaw Pact of the Soviet troops. This was for many of us a major ideological and emotional catastrophe. And when I went to Yugoslavia for the first time in 1973, I felt there was a new possibility visible for a socialist society. I was therefore very interested to see how these artists looked at their political environment. They were absolutely aware of the shortcomings of that because they lived there. And my sort of enthusiasm was time to time dimmed. Yes. Between our conversations in cafes, we played a game, for instance. Let's spot the informer. Yeah? Now, that was an interesting game because there was, even in that world, which seems to be ideal, still the undercurrent of spying and so on. And it was a sport, looking at informants, and they trained me to suss them, which was actually quite helpful. I'm just saying that an ideal world has all its many flaws, like anything else. I have to know that. That world these artists lived in was worthwhile living in and changing and working towards. It was, in essence, their sense of community between each other and their view of society at large, a sense of responsibility, which I felt was lacking in Germany and England at the time. I think that was very attractive, and is still, to me, attractive, because it still draws you into a number of practical problems. What is the value of art? And as you know, in our times, something has happened, which is a major exaggeration of the value of art, the financial equivalence for art. In fact, it goes as far as that art, an artistic success is measured in money. An artist's success is not about self-realization or how this artist approaches and finds an echo in society. No, it is the value, money, and basically the work of the galleries in collaboration with certain artists is basically a gigantic money-making scheme, rather depressing. But many artists are there. They're good, they're honest, they're intelligent, they're gifted, they're producing, and they have, in this world, to find their own community, and their own attachment to society. And in a way, I think, looking at this film now, that there is an encouraging tendency, even though these are voices from almost 30 years ago.
I wonder whether anybody has any kind of thoughts about the way in which the things tonight are sort of a series of speech acts, the way that there are a number of different ways and there are lots of different formal decisions of how to kind of communicate. There are lots of individual statements from individual people. They each choose different formal approaches in order to how to address an audience or a potential audience or how to express an idea. It seems really interesting to me that all in those and in the first one as well, these multiple different formal decisions, not just about having a particular message that you want to communicate, but giving a lot of thought to how you communicate that, what shape you put that communication in, and how you situate yourself. I wonder if anyone has any kind of thoughts on that at all or questions.
In some ways, the possibility in some ways of, I don't know, an artistic avant-garde being political, when in some ways what's changed now is that capitalism in some ways has absorbed much of what was seen as avant-garde practice, I didn't say modernism.
But the interesting thing here is that the performance we saw before is in a way an answer to it. Art can also enter the sphere of political dialogue. And in this case, it is a dialogue of that is enabled through us identifying with certain aspects on film, certain words, emotions, expressions, revelations that engage us and mobilize a degree of anti-capitalist or anti-imperialist thinking. I think that's very important. It is possible, and I think tonight's performance indicates that we are drawn into an artistic event which helps us to think, teaches us certain things, draws parallels, and in this way also develops a system of association. We associate ourselves with this set of problems.
I suppose the role of artists have always been quite often in revolution, like whatever, but who would put in charge of, say, the police during the Paris Commune, and because he was in charge of police, his first order was to arrest God or whatever. And there's been a whole tradition, really, of artists being involved in revolutionary stuff, and Mayakovsky mentioned there. It's just that I think, I don't know, there's something about a problem now of almost like capitalism's tendency to like overproduction. There's so much stuff now that in a way everything can kind of exist in a little pocket. Even to some extent, like little revolutions can kind of happen, kind of, and they seem like an event, but it's almost like there's such a kind of huge amount of kind of events happening that it sort of becomes difficult. I think it becomes more difficult than a sort of singularity, say, like the Russian Revolution.
But, I mean, in this society, we have to learn to select, not to be overwhelmed. In this society, we have to refuse to quite a degree to participate in consumerism. And that means also we have to be very careful in our choices, what culture, what art we relate to, so that we are not just superficial consumers of art. That's not.
I think I was sort of thinking what was interesting about what they were advocating in the film is that they're advocating for, to use sort of Marxist terminology, for art to have a use value, to actually have some sort of use. It can be a tool or an instrument to enact social change or enact some sort of effect on the world. Whereas, you know, the romantic ideal of art, or the idea of art for art's sake, or the idea of continuous novelty, is little pocket revolutions, but it's revolutions only in the sense that it's never revolutions in social relations, so art is purely an exchange value, you know, it goes into bank vaults, it's an asset, it's collateral. It never has a use that you can put it to. And that's maybe the difference. Maybe it's actually quite simple that you have to have almost a little, you know, art has to be some sort of tool for battering around.
I mean, two things. One, use value only emerges as a category by dint of exchange value. So art, of course, having a use value wouldn't be a hammer, it would only be by means of being briefly and not exchangeable. So that's not a good thing to be. But the thing that was striking me about what Luke was raising with these questions of contact, and then I suppose the question you raised about the question of speech acts, right? Because what sort of, for me, there's a formal consistency between the two things that indexes not a problem in them, but the problem that's at stake in both. And basically what's happening in both of them is the attempt to speak dispassionately about things that one thinks one should be passionate about, right? So you take, for example, the willful restraint. I mean, in a very flat way, it's talking flatly in the common thing. So you're speaking of, or one, but you happen to be in the room, so you are speaking of cats screaming like toddlers, or while Marina Abramovic is sort of frantically combing her hair, she's speaking, of course, flatly about, you know, art must be beautiful, art must be good looking, etc. And I don't have a particular point in this other than that I think that's largely what's at work in both of them in terms of the question of the attempt to speak abstractly and dispassionately about things that at the same time you're willfully provoking people to say, and yet, this is not the case. This affects bodies particularly. These are bodies who are beaten, these are lawyers who are beaten, these are cats who scream, these are scalps who bleed. And, you know, I suppose to all of you, but then to others, I'm wary of this as a fundamental technique. I don't think it's relatively obscure what the motivation is behind that operation of basically unlocking affect. Because that's what's at stake, is to try to unbind affect from either initial revulsions or having an immediately political codable value. So, oh, we see, you know, for example, the police defend orders, we have a certain affect towards that. Well, one of the attempts to kind of render these things structural and abstract is to break these locks apart. So the cats scream and scalps bleed, etc. They're not bound to a moral order in the same way. And speaking seems to be one way that's trying to do that. But to be honest, I'm not sure how that's working. If it is a different question, but at least how. I think that's what we're talking about.
No, I think that's speech acts and what it actually, you know, and of course when you start thinking about speech acts you automatically get sort of Searle and Austin and all that kind of stuff that comes immediately at you, and then being in Cairo for 3 months just leading up to prior to the revolution, in a sense researching and working on and thinking about language and thinking about violence and speech acts, and the whole absolute kind of shock. I mean, it of course we all know it didn't come from nothing. We know where it's come from, but it was still, you know, a shock. It was a huge shock. It was a shock to everyone that was there on that day when people started to turn up in the square, and then that whole, I suppose, watching it remotely. And then this whole kind of thing of breaking of the fear, because there was no way anybody could speak out. Nobody did speak out, you know, at all. And then that breaking of that fear, and then the return, and I don't know, I suppose personally I'm just trying to work that stuff. I'm just trying to work that sort of shit through. But there's something in that kind of, that form, if you like, not talk form, that form or the pedagogy of the revolution that's doing the race, that's happening now, that is totally we're immersed in, and all the kind of layers and layers of narrative of colonization and the process of self-decolonization that needs to sort of, for me, needs to happen in order to extrapolate that, in order to, like, speak out, or to, or what are the, you know, terms, the conditions, So I don't have any answers apart from those are the things that I'm thinking through in some ways. I'm not gonna justify it or defend it. I don't in any way, but it's a practice that's come out of a film practice for a long time of working around certain types of histories to do with more collective or, you know, I'm an anti-practice, whatever, I hate that term. It's like, I'd love to find another way to actually really socially be, whether that is, whether it's communism, socialism, or, it's, but the kind of individualistic, internalized value system that you said, and the way that art at the moment is the pinnacle. It's the pinnacle of everything. It's such an old, feudal, despicable. It depresses the hell out of me. The sort of state of art, But I'm still sort of, I'm still committed to it. So I have a kind of compulsion and a revulsion towards. The values of art. That's a long kind of.
Can you say something about poetics? Because it would seem to me, I understand your point, but it would seem to me that the way that both of you were speaking was actually heavily invested in a tone that was invoking a set of poetics. There was a wistfulness and something, something extraordinarily literary in how you were speaking. It wasn't a dispassionate voice, there wasn't a disconnect between sort of action and emotion. I felt like we were experiencing something much more like a Gesangskunstwerk, something that was immersive, something that was actually very difficult to get out of, to find the finery positions that actually are in the film because of its much starker. And I wonder if you could maybe, any of you talk a bit about the role of poetics in the performance, or aesthetics, but, for want of better words. They're both a minefield, but, it's an open.
I don't know.
Well, I have a really small point in the way my role in performing this is in fact there's always this move away from the closeness of the pieces that I'm actually playing throughout. So there's there's these stories where it's as you're moving from the narrative and into all these different spaces, there's something at play, but what the weird thing is that we've done this like several times, never at this one point where I felt like I'm playing rap at the same time, which is a really kind of interesting position to think of like, these two people making these a set of propositions, action.
But in saying that, Nabil and I have performed this piece a few times, and each time we do it, it's very different. This is the first time we've actually pretty much imported it as a piece without actually making some sort of scene changes. So, like when we did it in Istanbul, we always kind of write from, we always change a few scenes, but write from like the opening bit. Very much about placing you in the place here and now, but we made a conscious decision when we were invited to do this in the time scale that we had, that we would literally see what it would be to sort of literally perform it as the last time it was performed. So it's kind of, I'll get to the poetics pin, but the it kind of literally does migrate, it's nomadic. And its form is nomadic, and maybe some of this kind of poetics is nomadic as well.
Do you think it's almost like the work is becoming more like a figure than a fact? I think in particular the images of you, Karen, and Brad in these abandoned buildings, and that in a way you're standing notes, right? It's the most, you know, the most kind of basic action you could do, and it's a still shot of you standing there. But at the same time, it looks like the body is immersed in the poetics of this situation, rather than presenting itself as a fact of flesh and bones. And you know, I think that's interesting. You know, the idea of this kind of migration from something which is fact into something which is figure. You know, and figure relating to character, as you were saying, or to you know, to sort of a literary tradition.
Well, I think it's sort of. I totally agree with the migration, but it also changes as I think like how situations change. Again, when we talking about affect, the last time we performed this in Istanbul, like, on the way getting into Istanbul, I had like this crazy experience in the airport where I wasn't allowed to get into Istanbul. I was along with some of the people that were really harassed by the police for like 6-7 hours. And when I got out of there, I was just like absolutely, you know, seething anger, like really like punch people and stuff. And then, you know, it was a moment where you know, we changed stuff. And it was like this moment where I got to kind of do some shadow boxing. I think it's open to, it's supposed to be open to.
Could I address the thing? Because what interests me about your question, I mean, because my major interest in your practice, knowing, is that you really look at where cinema begins and ends. For me, it's one of the things I find most interesting. Where cinema begins and ends.
Oh.
That's one of the things I get out of it. This piece is really a tricky one, and I'm still working at how it went tonight, because we want to immerse you in a situation of conflict and negotiation where you're in a contested space, looking at another contested space. So you both fall into an image as it's pushing you out. But you have to actually be alienated by the work, and yet it immerses and manipulates and pulls, and then you pull away. That's why you can't be there, and you can't be there, and then something will happen. And yet, for me, the pieces in the little details, like tiny little things you might pick up between the relationship between the protagonist and the character, or a moment where you might think about the relationship towards how you consume images, or where the content is in the images, or even better, where you walk away. That's the killer. You know, and I feel like it's a fragile piece to show, because it's a little bit easier with cinema to just present something and the viewer has a very passive relationship to that image, and they fall into it. And even though we consciously understand how we produce and consume images, it still works.
But I would say the opposite. You know, I think that there's something really significant about the division provoked by the screen and an audience facing it, which in this work where we occupy a kind of ambient space and we move around is actually a binary division that is dissolved and becomes more of a, you know, the tension is almost sort of dissolved, and there's this risk that then occupying that space in this way becomes the passive experience, not receiving something from a screen when you're actually often very aware of something that's confrontational. You know, that you are in opposition to, that you choose whether to receive or not to receive. I mean, it's not really a criticism, it's just a sort of speaking out loud of thinking after physically experiencing what you're doing.
But maybe to answer the poetics thing, you know, it's, I suppose it's not, it's funny, it's not like, you know, you set out to sort of be a performer, and part of this is like the first time, I can't even remember how it started now. But I think it was because we've been working across all these different platforms. And in a sense, within this, there's a kind of this complex moment of being in one space and looking out onto another space. and then being in the sight of the representation of the book. You know, it's such a complex set of things. You can read everything through that kind of collapsed sort of set of quite ethical and aesthetic and political questions and social questions. That the whole voice thing is really just, it's kind of also evolved. Like, I felt like tonight with Yulia, I mean, we're really good friends anyway, but in performing this, we've become really close.
Yeah.
And there were certain moments where it was really tender, and I felt really, really tender to him. So in a sense, that was actually the first time, you know. So we've actually brought new elements into this, whereas we haven't done it before. We've had, you know, it's really hard to sort of explain that the space, the bodies, all of us constitute, we are the constituency. And this constituency can never, you know, happen. You know, we know that, but it just doesn't happen again. So those are the kind of factors that start to make these like details that either work or don't work, or get completely missed, or fall apart. I mean, that's why, in some ways, what you're saying is it's kind of like trying to hold a space. It's really fragile. It's really ephemeral, because it can really just not work. You know, like you said, you know, the passivity of like the whole, all the movement, like going to one side of the room, it's like on a ship, you know, the whole thing's going capsized, but there's this tiny little detail going on over there, which is like really important and tender, but that doesn't get registered. Or maybe it does, you know, maybe it's the dog that registers it, and not a human. That's how that happens.
I don't know, I mean, there's something, thinking this is a really silly point, but you know, I at one moment I had this sort of brief flicker of a fantasy of like going up and talking to you, right? And saying, I'm saying like, oh hey, how are you? You know, oh, we don't really know each other, but you know, and I mean, okay, this thing about divisions and the difference between seeing something on the screen and but the performance part is the distancing, the deliberately distancing effect of that is combined with, I think, maybe something that Evan was pointing to, about that mode of discourse, that kind of speech which sounds certain, but only of its own uncertainty, you know, is perhaps one of the most, like, alienating and, you know, prevalent modes of artistic discourse that we have, especially when it comes to art talking about politics. And I think, you know, the problem of affect, or the question of affect, you know, how, if it is a question about the space and interaction and tenderness, as you say, the divisions and the blockages to that happening are so severe in a way, partly because of the way it's performed. I don't know, I mean.
The person loves it too. I mean, that's in the film as well. I mean, that's in my question. I think it's entirely in both. This split between abstraction and affect, or set up as a basically, such that the only way to kind of cognitively map a situation and to speak of the task of art in general is to do so by battening down the hatches of affect, basically. Mm-hmm. Now, there are things that escape that, these moments of tenderness, which I see and I think actually are kind of cutting and beautiful in that way, and I don't like the word beautiful, so that's an exception, you know, but nevertheless, the general thing that does seem to work for me is precisely a work of establishing, building a distance between affect and abstraction, and arguing them as fundamentally opposed, which seems to me something worth talking about.
I think it's quite interesting. I've been making notes, and I think that you mentioned like the wish to participate and the frustration of the desire to participate, and then how to participate, and then you also mentioned the sense of responsibility, the question of the sense of responsibility that you felt these individuals had to some extent. And also, your question about talking flatly, it seemed like an interesting idea, this idea of speaking abstractly or dispassionately about things we care passionately about. And I think there is this, there is a tension, which I don't necessarily think is problematic, perhaps it's an interesting tension, but maybe it depends on how you reflect on it. Probably the case. But when we talk about critique and we talk about use, they tend to be quite problematically opposed. Because critique involves a kind of a self-distancing or a kind of place where you pull yourself out of your own position, whereas a use would indicate something more positive, as opposed to critique, which sort of implies a negative. And so there is always this kind of push and pull, which I think, yeah, is quite adequately described by this idea of the participation and the frustration of it. But I also think that in lieu of that tension, maybe this, I'm quite interested in this question of responsibility, actually. And I think earlier in the performance you mentioned, there was a little bit about, I mean, I can't remember who said it, I just wrote that, about the first person, like the I, not being used.
It was about Germany,
about like not using I.
You said they squeezed it away and the I was not first what was left out of the compression.
Yeah, exactly. And I was thinking that was quite interesting in terms of, and there was something about personal political, but I was thinking it's quite interesting, I mean, I just kind of personally, about how that kind of, how that I fits into this role of responsibility, and also how that, how we can look at that, I guess, productively in some way, in this tension between use value and critique, or positive and negative.
I'm just
digesting what you're saying.
I think there is a dialectic connection between the ability to be self-critical, which is in itself a creative or self-creative situation, and your criticism in the larger context of your life or your political condition. I think these are, of course, connecting tendencies, and these tensions are both moral tensions, but interestingly also poetic tensions. I think the way in this performance you have recorded sounds and spoken words, recorded dialogue in conversation with the now spoken life words, that in itself is also a system which opens not just different layers of conversation, but actually also different layers of perception, and therefore also openings for recognizing things. In a way, both this performance and film actually have one great virtue, and that is their authenticity. That old movie, in its own way, has an extraordinary sense of authenticity, nothing else. But here, in this performance, we actually had a moment of intense authenticity, where we are present at the modulations of different kinds of presence, different kinds of intensities, which actually through the choreography of screens and interactions of motion picture and implanted monologues and dialogues have been massively enhanced. I think it is an incredibly exciting procedure to not only put over, say, historical facts or psychological or philosophical tendencies, it's just also a way of making us experience something that would otherwise be
just on the screen and nowhere else. And you see, when you saw the people drifting through the screen from one screen to the other, or from one performance center to the other, you know, they passed through the images. Now, their shadows mingled with the projected shadows of the protagonists in Pakistan. It is an extraordinary thing. It's a wonderful phenomenon.
I find that incredibly romantic. I find it authoritarian, actually, and romantic as a way of describing that experience. That wasn't my experience.
You said that
I think that the differences were... what was interesting in the work for me was the way in which the differences were actually submerged by a theatricality. That the materiality that you're romanticizing into existence was also submerged. And that I felt as if my body actually wasn't present, you know, in this immersive situation. That was actually what was provocative in it for me, was the frustration of feeling maybe absent, and that I was subject to being underwater almost, or in an immersive experience. And as for authenticity, I really don't understand what that means at all in this context. I find that hugely problematic.
It is about
I felt like we were experiencing a series of images and a series of theatricalities. I mean, for me, a good, an example of a film which crosses between registers in the material way that you're describing the performance is probably an experience. Would be something like Valiette's Invisible Adversaries, where you move between a film as material and video as material and registers of performance and acting and non-acting, and you know, it can happen on screen. It's not by default a guarantee that we're in the presence of people, that there's any experience of liveness or materiality because we're walking through an image. But for me, I felt submerged, and I felt that the materiality that you're talking about was also submerged.
Yeah, but what you say doesn't at all conflict with my view. Perhaps it is a question of language we use. Because indeed, I was an onlooker, and I saw people's shadows passing. It was not my shadow. And indeed, that strange interaction between being present and not present is precisely at the heart of that experience, which makes it for us also a tragic experience. And that is not a romantic note at all. It is so that there are things happening and brought close to us, which we cannot influence for the time being.
Can I say, sorry, I'm afraid, I didn't know we'd all have quite so much to say when we were scheduling this, so we've got loads of work we have to do in here tonight, so I'm afraid we have to kind of move out of this space. We've got to build a seating bank before midnight. So there's another space that we can all go to and carry on this conversation. It's really rich. I'd invite you all to come with us if you're interested. Just downstairs at the bottom of the stairs, there's a little discussion space, or we'll get a drink or something. But otherwise, thanks very much, everybody, for a good time this evening. And I hope you're all around for the rest of the day.